Hey, everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
Can't even go to Thanksgiving dinner with our uncle because you end up in some weird fight that is unnecessary. These guys are just weird. And it's, you know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club.
That's the word, weird. The word of the day, as they say. Kamala Harris chooses that guy. That's Governor Tim Walz of the state of Minnesota to be her vice president. Who is he, and why did they pick him, and why didn't they pick the other guy? We're going to tell you. This is Direct Impact. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. Okay, it's all about politics, right? There are two selections that we have to share with you today that give us some insight, and this is important, into the minds of the people in the United States who are in charge of the left, or more specifically, the Democratic Party. First, the Democrats have chosen, as we mentioned a little while ago, their vice president, and the winner is Tim Walz of Minnesota. We're going to tell you why he has been picked as the countermeasure to J.D. Vance, and we're also going to be telling you who they didn't pick and why. But first, as we like to say, but first, let me tell you about another important selection. The billings for the upcoming Democratic convention in Chicago in 2 weeks are in, and they seem to be telling us an awful lot about who is in charge over there at the Democratic Party handling this campaign. The first night of the convention, Tuesdays, you probably know this, right? It's usually where they put speakers that don't matter so much, mayors of like different cities around the United States, state legislators that no one's ever heard of, the kind of people who don't matter as much because, well, nobody's watching on Tuesday. People don't start watching these things until later in the week. Well, guess who's speaking on Tuesday? The president of the United States, Joe Biden. What does that tell you? Wednesday and Thursday is when they start getting more people watching, and that is when former President Obama is going to be speaking. So who matters, right? Ask yourself, who do they care about? Who do they want to put out there, and who do they want to hide, right? And at that same time, by the way, just so you know, in case you're going to be watching in 2 weeks, it's going to be first President Biden when they hope nobody's watching, then it's going to be Clinton, then it's going to be Obama, then it's going to be, of course, the vice president from Minnesota, and then, of course, at the end, the big speech from candidate Kamala Harris. That's the way they're planning it so far, and it says a lot. Then, of course, there's the other big selection that we have to tell you about today. As we mentioned, the pick for VP is Tim Walz of Minnesota. He's credited and may have been chosen for pulling off what is essentially a Trumpism, giving somebody a name or a brand and having it stick. He, not Harris, came up with that whole description that they're using now against their opponents that is essentially this. Take a listen.
We do not like what has happened where we can't even go to Thanksgiving dinner with our uncle because you end up in some weird fight that is unnecessary. And I think bringing back people together, well, it's true. These guys are just weird. And it's, you know, they're running for He-Man Women Haters Club or something. That's what they go at. That's not what people are interested in.
We're not going to play their game. We called them out for the weird nonsense that they believe, and we presented a different argument to the American public, one where everybody matters. One where we can achieve, one where we solve problems.
So it's kind of like, it's like calling Marco Rubio Little Marco, right? Or calling Hillary Clinton Crooked Hillary. It's like, come up with a name, you hope it sticks, and it looks like in this case, this guy came up with something, it stuck, and now he's the VP. Great. But maybe more importantly than who the Democrats have picked in this case is who they didn't pick. The big money donors, Wall Street, and party apparatchiks all wanted Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. Here's Shapiro. Okay, so but there's a sense that Shapiro would have caused division in the party because he called protesters who disagreed with Israel's massacre in Gaza the KKK, or compared them to him. He also called for clamping down on college campuses who allowed protests to take place. He even went after Ben & Jerry's because apparently Ben & Jerry's had an ice cream and had a position on the Israeli settlements. I'll be honest with you, Manila. I thought that Josh Shapiro was a shoo-in. I thought he was going to take it. I was kind of surprised this morning when you, of all people, were the first one to call me and tell me, hey, guess what? They went with the guy from Minnesota. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, my read on that is slightly different than yours, Rick. I thought it was going to be a toss-up between Walz and the junior senator out of Arizona, astronaut, Mark Kelly, also the husband of Gabby Giffords, because as people know, the northern states like Minnesota, like Michigan, Wisconsin, have all been kind of known as the blue wall and what's left of it anyway.
Exactly.
And in Arizona has shifted away from being squarely in the Republican camp, formerly a red state, has kind of gone purple now. So I thought maybe they might be leaning towards astronaut Mark Kelly. But, you know, in this instance, I get why they picked Waltz because, you know, he's kind of vanilla. There's nothing really remarkable about him.
Which is
Kamala Harris.
But it's funny you say he's vanilla. That's the Midwest. I mean, Midwest is where you don't have an accent. You don't say anything outlandish. You just get up and you go to work every day. And that's what they're thinking with this guy. They'll be able to get Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and Ohio. I doubt it. He'll certainly deliver Minnesota. The rest is yet to be seen. I want to stay on politics with you, Manila, because I want to talk about something we talked about this morning and something I'm going to be talking about with a special guest today. You know what is and will play a key role in this election? Race. That's right. It's a race, and it's about race. And when it comes to race in the United States, we're always just talking about one thing, color. Seriously, think about what I'm about to say here for a minute, because I want you to consider this. Every country in the world celebrates the distinctions of its citizens. It's what makes them different. You know, different people have different nationalities. Different people have different ancestries. Different people have different races. And among the races, there are distinctions even in the races. Different people in different countries have different histories. Those are all the great things about us, which makes us part of the humanity, right? And that is how almost every place in the world sees it, except for us, except for the United States. Here, the only thing that matters is color. Seriously, in the United States, there are two categories used by the media and in general, and most certainly in the way they cover politics. Here in the United States, you're either white. Yeah, that's a white guy. Or you're a person of color. What does that mean? What color? Who the hell knows? But that's the way you're classified if you live in the United States. Nowhere in the world do they do that. And here's how it works. If you're a white Anglo-Saxon, European American, then you're white. You could be a dark guy from New Jersey who's Italian and be darker than anybody. Doesn't matter. He's a white guy, no matter how dark his skin is. You can also be a recent arrival from some European country like Scotland or France. Then you also can be considered a white guy, even though you're kind of an immigrant to the United States. But if you're Latin American, even if you're a freckle-faced Argentinian or blonde Mexican, you are and will always be a person of color and not allowed to consider yourself white. Watch this. It's in Spanish, but I'll translate.
Being Mexican means you can't be white. How can you be white and be Mexican if all Mexicans are like that?
It's exactly what he... Now, that video, by the way, and that sentiment popular in Mexico, where they make fun of the fact that in America, no Mexican is allowed to be considered white, no matter how white they are. However, here in America, Mexican Americans have for generations been indoctrinated to believe that they actually are not white. So they call themselves, and when they talk, they say, oh, yeah, my friend over there, the white guy. It's like, even though he looks like that guy. It's not just Mexicans, by the way. Here's an Asian man correcting his son for daring to think that he's white.
My son was born and raised in America. I remember one day he came home from school. That was when he was about 5 years old. He said to me, hey, Dad, I learned American history today. I said, wow, that's great. He said, now I really feel bad for black people. I said, yeah, they're really mistreated in American history. He said, yeah. And I'm so glad that I'm white. I was like, hold on. You're not white. He said, then what am I? I said, you're yellow.
Yellow. It gets even more weird. You ready for this? In America, they have even come up with a name for the original Americans to separate them from the real Americans. Are you following me here? Who, of course, the real Americans are the white guys. That's right. While Mexicans have to consider themselves to be brown, That's the color they've been given to use among themselves. Asians have to, I guess, consider themselves yellow. How ridiculous is that? So-called original Americans are you ready? They're red. They get the color red. And they, too, have bought into it. Watch this Native American woman referring to a reporter as a white lady.
You know what, white people? You've had your voice here for 524 years. 524 years you've been visible, white lady. You've been visible for 524 years. Look how fast your white man comes and steps up for you.
It's like they believe it, right? The indoctrination. How and why do you think this happened? How has the American body politic, especially the Democrats and the media, how have they been able to convince us all that we're all either white or a person of color and nothing else can be taken into consideration? Why have we accepted these terms? Heck, even Republicans haven't figured this out or how to combat this. J.D. Vance the other day, he fell into this trap. He was asked about his wife and he was talking about Trump's comments. By the way, his wife is of Indian descent. And he actually said, look it up. He said, well, my wife's not white, but I still love her. Dude, it's like, why would you say that? That's crazy. Fact of the matter is, in an election year, we should consider how we think of these things, right? Because if the media can convince us that if we're an immigrant or a minority or your last name happens to be Sanchez or Rodriguez, then you have to consider yourself a person of color and identify for the most part with African Americans, then you're not just classifying me, you're literally telling me how I have to think. And eventually, you know what else they're doing? And especially this matters now, they're telling you how to vote. All right, listen, by the way, Manila, I know you've got a lot to say about this, but you also have invited a guest who's gonna be joining us. And by the way, you're welcome to stick around if you want to. For this conversation with him. Tell me who this is. We're going to put him up on screen. Tell us who it is.
It is a good friend of mine. His name is Jason Miles. He is an author, a social commentator, a musician, a podcaster. Jason does it all, but he's a great observational writer about how race plays into the American social structure, the fabric of the U.S., and as you just alluded to, about how eventually we're supposed to vote based on our color. And on top of that, Rick, not only are we're on the color spectrum now based on our races, I think it's even funnier when you add in the food references, right? An Asian person being yellow, you're a Twinkie sometimes. You're yellow on the outside, white on the inside.
Nice.
Or you're a coconut. You're brown on the outside, white on the inside. Or an Oreo.
See?
Or whatever. You're a mixed race person. Where do you fall? Where are you supposed to vote? Someone like Jason Miles will break that down.
Yeah. Hey, Victor, do me a favor. Can we see Jason? There you go. Thank you, Victor. Jason. You don't have to say anything yet. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and then everyone's going to get to know what you think. And you're going to tell me I'm either full of crap with what I just said or that maybe you agree with some of it. This is going to be a great conversation, an important conversation, by golly. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Rick Sanchez. Welcome back. I love this topic, and I'm glad that we get to share it with you because, man, as people, we are so complex. And in America, you're not allowed to be complex or talk about complexities. You're only allowed to be either white or a person of color. That makes no damn sense. And that's why we've invited this guest who's the perfect guy to talk to about this. Jason's written a book. It's called I Was a Teenage Anarchist. It looks at whether people are genuinely resisting. And it also talks about how people compromise their own values to be a part of mainstream success. So it's kind of what we're talking about here as well. And by the way, Manila's going to be joining us as well because she and Jason have known each other and she's interviewed him in the past. This is my first time doing it. Jason, what do you think of, let's start with just my general premise. Why is it that we're the only country in the world where we are only really given two classifications to choose from? I find that crazy and frustrating. How about you?
I mean, if you go throughout Latin America, especially countries that had large sugar plantations that have large black populations, you can see something similar, right? Like Brazil has, I believe, a larger black population there than we do in the United States.
But what does that have to do with calling a person who just arrived in Brazil last week from, I don't know, Nicaragua, and saying that he's a person of color. Why? Because he's an immigrant?
I don't know if they call him a person of color, but they probably call him Nicaraguan. And there is colorism in Latin America. And I wouldn't disagree with the framework you're using. I would maybe expand and say there is a race reductionist framework that we use in this country that obfuscates class. And that becomes a big problem, because if all we see is just the color, as you put it, mm-hmm. then we don't see certain class contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in one of the clips you played of the Tim Walz, the new vice president, when all you see is color, you can get this moment like we got in 2016. If you remember when Bernie Sanders was running,
yeah.
he was running on a platform that really encouraged public goods governance, kind of a return to New Deal Keynesianism. Things like free college, Medicare for all. These were the big ticket items in which he was running on.
Uh-huh.
And these things would definitely help people of color, black people disproportionately would definitely benefit from these things. What kneecapped that 2016 race more than anything was the emergence of BLM saying that he had no quote-unquote black agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the black agenda? Did he have to embrace something like reparations? He wanted to have housing programs.
Yeah, but there's nothing you're saying that I don't agree with, but I'm talking more about just classification. What I'm trying to nail down, and Manila, you're welcome to join in here, is why is it that we don't describe somebody more exactly? Why can't you say he is a Jamaican American who has a dad who was from India, and by the way, he happens to be light-skinned. Now I got a full understanding of who that person is. When you tell me, you know, I am a Cuban, I was born in Cuba, my parents, my great-grandparents immigrated from Spain, but when I check my DNA, I'm mostly from Athens, Greece, or some, that tells you something about who I am. To call me a person of color tells you nothing about me. Nor does it say anything about you that you're a person of color. Nor does it tell me anything when you call somebody a white guy. What does that mean? You see my point?
Well, let me.
I mean, you can project
let me,
onto
those.
Let me
jump
those.
In there real quick.
Oh, go ahead.
I want to jump off based on what Jason was saying about the reductionist part. And I think that's part of an imperial empire's way of divide and conquer. So if you call populations, you know, white or other, and then you break down the other to this unnuanced brown person, yellow person, red person, black person, it's still a mode of divide and conquer. And when it comes to politics, there's nothing easier to win a certain segment of the population
and
if
to match
you divide
them
as so. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. Jason, what do you think?
Oh, I mean, definitely. Racial politics, I'm from California. So racial politics is something that we see. There's also, I guess you could say there's benefits within it as well. We do have to kind of pull back for a little bit and see how these things actually work in real time. So for a state like California, once you finally start to have Latin legislators, you start to get laws passed that it make it easier for people that might be undocumented to become mm-hmm. citizens and receive certain benefits and to be able to work. So
what a concept.
I
having
can't disagree.
What a concept.
Say that
having Hispanic legislators in a state where the Hispanics have been there for 900 years. What a concept that just 20 years ago they said, hey, you know what? Let's have a Hispanic congressman there. My point is that what's interesting, I think, about this is, and here's what I think the motivation is. I think Democrats know that they'll always be able to count on the black vote. And there's only so many black Americans, or only 11% of the population. So to grow that vote, they need to bring others to so-called consider themselves to be part of the black vote. So they need to match up the Asians with the blacks and the Hispanics with the blacks, and literally have this effort to create this new grouping that's called people of color. I think that is something they have done, and they have done it on purpose. Call me crazy.
Yep, but Rick,
I don't know
Rick,
if it's calling
if
you crazy.
You,
I think we also have to understand why can the Democrats be able to contain the black vote the way they do. right? There has to be something that's paying off for black people in some capacity for that to work. Or is it just the overt racism that you get out of the Republican Party?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think it's like 88% of voting age black people in America vote Democrat, and there's been about a 3 or 5% shift in the years of Trump, but it's not a massive shift.
But are the Democrats delivering? Are they giving the African American vote, other than what some people would call lip service, actually a sense of empowerment, as they often promise they will?
I would say God no, but then again, when you look back at the year 2020, we call it the George Floyd summer, right? The
yeah.
nation exploded in protests for various reasons that we don't have time to get into.
Yeah.
But let's just say one of the main focuses was defunding the police departments and social justice causes. Well, what does the Democratic Party give you? They give you kente cloth and kneeling, and then corporate America pays $50 billion in racial causes. But what really changes in America, especially when it comes to policing, especially when we look at numbers for people getting killed by police, it hasn't really gone down since 2020.
But that's a great example of exactly what I'm talking about. You're going off the reservation here by talking about the police. I get it. But because his points are correct. However, here's what makes this so dangerous that we're talking about, this classification. It is so easy in the argument that you just presented to then separate Americans by white and people of color. Because if you're white, you're going to be with the police no matter what they do. But if you're people of color, you're going to question whether the police, because you have an aunt who pulled you over once.
No.
And that's how it's used. I'll raise you this.
If you remember the 90s, when tough on crime laws were coming down.
Yeah.
And 1994 is the year where we get the omnibus crime bill from current president Joe Biden. Kamala Harris is a black woman that's coming of political age around that time too, and the omnibus crime bill was not hated by a lot of the chattering class in black America. If anything, it was looked at as a bit of a salve for the violence we were seeing due to the drug trade and gang violence in major metropolitan areas. So the solution that a lot of people thought, and even people like Kamala Harris thought, was that if we lock up these drug dealers for long periods of time, then we could end this problem. Political theorist Ishmael Reed in 1991, I believe, said, "I don't care if the kid is 12 years old, lock him up for the rest of his life." Now, I don't know if Ishmael Reed feels the same way 30-some years later, but we would look at him as a person on the left then and now, and that's the way he felt.
But I think a
lot of people's feelings when it comes to crime is lock these people up. I mean, look at where people
are. But who are they playing to?
2024.
But who are they playing to when Biden did that? When Biden did that, Jason, he was playing to the quote unquote white guy vote, right? I mean,
I would disagree and say he was playing to it was a bipartisan consensus.
Yeah. But who was he?
It's a little different time.
I lived in that era, and I remember that suddenly I saw traditional Democrats trying to act like they were all tough because they didn't want the Republicans, who at the time had been led there by Ronald Reagan, to take away that vote from them also. They had already lost it in the South, and they were afraid to lose it everywhere else. You wanted to say, Manila, I'm sorry that I stepped on you on the last go.
Swinging the other way to Jason's point about Kamala Harris in the 90s versus Kamala Harris circa 2020 in the BLM riots. Now she's suddenly setting up, you know, these defund the police accounts to get people that torched courthouses or federal buildings out of prison, right? So she's completely flip-flopped in the other direction, and now she's trying to, you know, put on. She has no bona fides internationally. I know she's supposed to as VP at this point, but she still doesn't have any of that right now at this point. And furthermore, to the point about nuance that we were, you know, talking about earlier with race, the reason these politicians don't stump on the nuance is because then they will have to rule and make policy based on nuance. That means they can be held, their feet can be held to the fire. So it's easier to just say, well, black people care about this, and Asian people care about that, and Latino people care about this.
And it's especially easy when,
in broad terms.
When it's especially easy when you've already classified them as such. So then they think they have to think that way, because after all, I am a person of color, or I am considered a white guy. So I fit into this agenda they have given me, so all I have to do is put my suit on. That's the point that I'm trying to make that I find frustrating in these times. But darn it, we're out of time. Jason, you are a delightful guest. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you. And share. Can we get you back? Let's go another round. Yeah, we'll go another round this time. We'll go more into the politics of it. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Manila. See you both.
Thank you, Rick.
That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.